Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. Hopefully, this morning finds you well, safe, and sane. For me, that's been the biggest challenge of this whole thing. I'm Anne Baldwin, one of the hosts of your program, and I'm very happy to have with us outside of our studio today, remotely, Beth Connor, who's the chief administrator for The Connection. Beth, it's good to at least be able to talk to you.
Yeah, good morning, Ian.
Good
at least
morning.
We're able to connect.
That's right. You know, and that's what this is all about. I think everybody's, that's been the biggest challenge here, but it's, you know, we're able to do things virtually. The show must go on, if you will. So here we are.
Well, yeah, we're very fortunate. I was talking with my guest earlier, our guest, and saying if this happened 10 years ago, where would we be? We wouldn't be on this call right now. So we are fortunate that technology is where it's at today.
Right. I just hope it doesn't stay this way when we go back to normal, because I miss my hugs, man. I'm a hugger.
I know.
I really am.
I know, and people are looking at that and saying, you know, how used to this are we going? How will things go back? And I guess that remains to be seen.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you being here. You're always the force behind the show. You set up all of our great guests, including our next one. So I'm going to let you do the introductions, if you will.
Well, on the call, we actually have a guest from all the way from Washington, D.C. He is the new senior VP of policy for the Connecticut Hospital Association, Paul Kidwell. And unfortunately, because of COVID-19, he is still in D.C., trying to move his family up here, but taking a little bit of time. But Paul's role, and I'll let him talk a little bit about it, is to oversee all of the hospitals in Connecticut. And we know that our hospitals are doing the very difficult work day in and day out, caring for many, many patients. And we thought it'd be great to get Paul's perspective on how the hospitals are holding up here in Connecticut, and sort of what resources they need, and what we might be able to do to help and support our healthcare workers.
So, Beth, did you just say that Paul, you're new to this position? This is a new job for you.
It is.
Wow.
February.
And what a job! What a job it is. Well, welcome to the program, and you know, how are our hospitals doing, Paul?
Listen, well, first, thank you for having me on, and a real honor to be able to talk to you about Connecticut's hospitals and what they're doing to respond to the current crisis. And I think, you know, hospitals are doing well, and, it's a challenging time. But as our CEO, Jennifer Jackson, has said before, hospitals, we train for these types of events all year long. So there are certainly plans that are in place that we activate to begin to deal with these types of events. Certainly, this is unprecedented, so it is stretching our resources, certainly, and presenting new challenges. but, you know, Connecticut's hospitals are up to the task.
Well, I just read there was a recent article in the Hartford Business Journal, and the headline actually said that the coronavirus is costing hospitals in Connecticut $400 million a month.
Yeah, it's really stark. I mean, it's a stark number, and I'll tell you a little bit about why that is, because I think it's a little antithetical, right? Because you assume that we are having these patients come in and for COVID, but what we did in preparation for the response was we basically stopped all non-essential surgeries. So to the extent a surgery could wait, we stopped those surgeries. And the reason is because a couple things. Number one, we need to conserve space in the hospital facility, certainly as the number of COVID patients increases. But second, as you've heard a lot in the news, we want to conserve the personal protective equipment, the PPE, I think as most people now know it, so that our healthcare workers have that available to them when these COVID patients come in. Because as you know, the virus itself is extremely transmittable, and the PPE is the sort of thing that is helping keep our healthcare workers safe and able to stay in the hospital and serve those patients. But that's a long way to say we have emptied out a lot of space in our hospitals. We're not doing the sort of quote unquote normal things that you'd expect hospitals to do on a daily basis in some instances, and that that it means a significant decline in revenue. We should also think about the expenses that hospitals have incurred in building out new patient space, in purchasing more PPE, and looking for things like ventilators. So it's a sort of perfect storm, and it's like you said, stark. It's hundreds of millions of dollars a month, and but it's what we have to do to make sure that these patients are cared for.
Sure, and you talked a little bit about, Paul, that you've had some plans in place. So, you've had a crisis plan in place. What are the differences this time around?
The patients that are coming into the hospital with COVID, many of them are requiring a very acute level of care, a critical care setting. So we have had, in many cases, to build out additional capacity rooms in the intensive care unit. Additionally, you've heard that the patients certainly are coming in with severe respiratory issues, and so that has created a need for additional ventilators, because unfortunately a number of these patients do need mechanical ventilation at some point in their stay. Also, it's a virus, right? And so it is very easily passed on between patients, between workers, physicians, nurses, hospital staff in general. And so the need for that personal protective equipment has really been enhanced. So it's a little bit different than, say, if you were a blizzard or those types of events where you may need a lot of emergency care. In this case, we're needing pretty acute intensive care for a good bit of time for each of these patients, and that has strained the capacity somewhat.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Paul Kidwell. He's with the Connecticut Hospital Association, the Senior VP of Policy. But, it would seem to me with all of these people coming in that there would be more revenue coming in. How does it work? I know, when I've gone to the emergency room, you go to the hospital, the primary focus oftentimes feels like, what's your insurance? Who are you insured by? How is that working?
Right.
And are a lot of these services just being done because they out of necessity, or are these people coming in with insurance coverage?
We haven't really looked at that sort of financial data acutely yet. I get the sense that most people are coming in and they're covered by insurance, and certainly the billing will go through the same process that it normally would. All the technical details, you have to create new codes and those types of things in order for the billing to work. Certainly we've seen, insurers enable the testing to come without copays. But it's really a patient volume issue, right? When we stop the non-essential surgeries, that's just a lot of people who are not coming to the hospital any longer, and you're not replacing those people as quickly with other services. And it's because, for the very real reason, that we want to make sure we do have the space as the number of COVID patients increases.
And this has been a very closely coordinated project with, all the legislation and, the governor's response to all of these things. Talk to us a little bit about how the hospitals in Connecticut are preparing and, sort of reacting to Governor Lamont's suggestions or mandates on COVID-19.
I would label it less a response than a partnership. I mean, we have worked in very close partnership with the governor and his administration on any number of issues that we've had to work through in order to sort of both prepare and then respond to the crisis. And I'll just give you one example. So like all of us, many of us with small children, right? School is out, childcare has been in flux, and not only are folks being asked to come to sort of work if you're working at a hospital, but you're also having to sort of manage your home life too, right? So we worked very closely with Commissioner Beth Bye's office to try to figure out how do we help these hospital employees with their childcare needs. And so the state set up
a hotline. She's in charge of early childhood. Yeah.
That's right. So she's the commissioner of early childhood, and we work directly with their staff to assess the hospital need for childcare. They set up a hotline. We have connected with some childcare providers that may have seen a decrease in the number of kids that they were providing care to because parents were just home. But it's those types of things where we've been working directly with the state to deal with those needs that you may not necessarily, as an outside observer, consider, right? You think of a hospital and the care it provides, but you have to also think about all the needs that the sort of staff requires in order to provide that real care.
So, Paul, we've seen a lot of, or if you haven't, our listeners have probably experienced this, that there's a lot of remote medicine that's happening right now. I know my doctor, if I've got an issue, we're going to talk on the phone or we're going to FaceTime or whatever works. How does that seem to be going? Because let's face it, there are people out there with healthcare needs other than COVID-19.
Absolutely. And boy, we've had a real renaissance, right, in telemedicine in the last couple of weeks. People who probably didn't have any idea that it existed a couple weeks ago now, like you said, might be talking to their primary care physician using a telemedicine. Now in the hospital, it's slightly different, and it's really important, frankly, where you have a disease that certainly can be passed amongst people very easily. What we've been using sort of telemedicine for is so that healthcare providers can sort of remain outside of a room if they sort of check in on a patient or to assess a patient, so that they're not having to go in and have that sort of direct patient contact that could put them at risk. Certainly there are many cases where you're going to have that direct patient contact, but where you can avoid it, you can both use telemedicine to give that appropriate patient care. You're also preserving the protective equipment that we are all trying to preserve so that we can sort of keep up with the demand of patients. Some of the telemedicine, there were a lot of rules around before this telemedicine, and the federal government and both the state government have been very good around assessing those rules, sort of what made sense then and what doesn't make sense now in a new world where we really do need to rely on that remote medicine. And so they've acted very aggressively to take down some of those barriers so that those opportunities for telemedicine are more apparent and can be used sort of advantageously.
You've been talking about all the PPE. I know at the Connection, not a hospital by any means, or a medical office, but we are a human service agency with many clients that we serve. And a big number of them in our residential treatment facility. So our staff are sort of front-lined with these folks right now and trying to stay healthy, safe, and keep the clients healthy and safe as well. So we have been offering PPE, personal protective equipment, and having difficulties just obtaining it now. So we are actually sort of sewing our own masks and, you know, improvising wherever we can. We do have some equipment, but we're trying to make it stretch as well. Sort of what's the challenge in that for you at the hospitals in terms of not having that equipment? I know we've heard about that nationally as being an issue with this pandemic. Nobody really, you know, has the supplies. How are you handling that? And, you know, is there hope that we're going to get those supplies at some point that we need?
Yeah, it's so critically important, right? I mean, the safety of the healthcare workers are number one priority in all of this, just for their own personal health and safety, but also because, honestly, we need them to treat these patients, and so we need to keep them healthy. And so the availability of PPE is something certainly that we're concerned about. You know, hospitals have implemented some policies to try to conserve the use of the PPE. Like I said, we use the sort of telemedicine aspects to limit contact with patients that might be able to would transmit the disease. We are looking at processes that would allow us to sterilize sort of those N95 masks, which are those masks you've been hearing about a lot, and
those are like
safely
gold.
Reuse them. They are like gold, and they're critically important when you're, you know, in contact with a patient who is COVID-19 positive. Certainly, they've been looking at ways to extend the use of the PPE, so it safely extend the use of the PPE. You know, it's a challenge. From the hospital association's perspective, what we have tried to do is, you can imagine, we have started to get hundreds of inquiries from manufacturers, distributors, buyers, sellers who have PPE or just to sell or to donate in some instances. And what we've tried to do for our hospitals is, in working with the state, sort of become a clearinghouse for that information. So we, with the state, run down leads, try to decipher, you know, who the appropriate leads are and who are not, and then get those out to the hospitals for their information. Because there are people out there who do have some PPE available, and we want to make sure our hospitals are connected to that. I will say another really important thing to note here, and it's I think people get it, but I really want to emphasize it, is the generosity of Connecticut's residents and businesses in all of this. I mean, they have been extraordinary, where businesses are looking to see, do I have any N95 masks that I can donate? Do I have any surgical masks that I can donate? And that has been really a wonderful process. And the state has set up through 211 a system where you can, if you have something you need to, would like to donate, you can contact them. But we work with the Connecticut, sort of the CBIA, with the association that represents businesses in the state, to partner with them to try to locate some of those donations. And that's just been it's not surprising, but it's wonderful nonetheless.
Absolutely.
We received a wonderful donation ourselves. Small donation, not, you know, hospital-worthy, but small donation of masks and gowns and gloves from Porter and Chester Institute, which is they have a nursing program, and they're not able to be in school right now. So they had a small amount of supplies to donate, and we were very fortunate and very thankful to get those for our staff. Going to be using those, distributing those, and using those next week. But, you know, those are days when you can get your hands on some of those things.
Absolutely, yep. Paul, the other thing I wanted to ask is, how is Connecticut doing? How are we doing, you know, compared to other states? How are our hospitals faring, our healthcare system? You know, what are some of the highs and some of the lows right now?
Sure, and I think depending on where you are in the state, you sort of feel this a little bit differently, right? If you're in Fairfield County, close to the New York border, where there are larger outbreak in cases or more hospitalized patients, you're probably feeling a little bit different than if you live in Tallinn County, right, where there are not as many cases. I will say that, so the strain on the hospitals and the systems, dependent on where they are in the state, is different. And based on that, just the number of cases they have and the people who are coming in. And I think that what really is remarkable is how quickly our state's hospitals have adapted to the need of the patients coming in. And so they are very quickly creating new space to treat patients. They are learning more and more about the disease every day and how to treat patients. I think one of the nice stories here is that patients are being discharged. You know, they're coming into the hospital with COVID. They're an inpatient and they're being discharged as healthy individuals. As we compare to the rest of the country, I think it's not New York City, certainly, but there are parts of Fairfield County where it certainly is very intense. I think our hospitals are faring really well, but it's a strain because this is unprecedented,
right?
And they're doing as best they can to both sort of manage the patients that are coming in now, and for those who don't have a high patient load right now. Just getting ready. And I will say this, one of the things, the really important things that I should have said at the start is that, and the governor has emphasized this, is that we're sort of working as one one Connecticut hospital system. And we are working together to understand the needs of fellow hospitals and make sure they have what they need when they need it. And I think that coordination is extremely important, and that's one of the roles that the Hospital Association plays, is we are helping to make sure that those hospitals are communicating regularly, that everyone understands what everyone else is dealing with at the time and what their needs are. So that's an important story in all of this.
We're speaking with Paul Kidwell from the Connecticut Hospital Association. From the inside looking out, what is your best piece of advice where we're at today with people who are listening to this program? We know we should wash our hands. We know we should wear masks. What can you tell us maybe that we haven't already been told or haven't thought about?
I guess my best piece of advice is please do follow the governor's guidance on stay home and stay healthy. It is extremely important seeing the disease sort of flatten, that we remain distant from each other for this period of time. And I will say it on behalf of everyone who works at a hospital. These are folks who are going to the hospital to do their job for all of our families and friends. And the best thing we can do for them is to follow that guidance, stay home, stay healthy. And it's really the number one way that we're going to see sort of this dissipate over time.
I think you mentioned it, Paul, we've all seen it, TV, we've seen it locally, regionally, and nationally. I don't think that anybody has more respect right now than for our healthcare workers, our first responders, our police officers, and all the folks who are on the front lines of this. So it's good to know that there is an organization like the Connecticut Hospital Association, because you need that glue to keep everything together, and it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing, and that's appreciated.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, and we're only a small part, and we just are in awe of the hospitals we get to represent, and especially the staff at those hospitals who are really just fighting every day on the front lines of this crisis. And I would just say, if you get a chance to see one, say thank you. Mm-hmm. Say thank you to them. And but again, best thing you can do right now is stay home, stay healthy, and we'll make it through this together.
Well, continued luck with you and your family staying safe in Washington, D.C., and we'll look forward to seeing you in Connecticut, hopefully soon.
Can't wait to be there.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul Kidwell.
Thanks so
from
much.
Thank you, Paul.
From the Connecticut Hospital
Bye-bye.
Association. So on behalf of myself and Beth Connor, we want to thank you for listening to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once, wanted a lullaby.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.